Saturday's defeat at Brentford showed that Mark Bowen's Reading are unlikely to be a team of surprises as an informed side lost 1-0 on our final trip to Griffin Park. Welcome to episode 210 of the Tarlhurst End podcast. I'm your host, Mark Mayo, as per usual, but joining me this week is a debutant in the Tarlhurst End Academy of podcasters and writers on the website, and that is Harry Chafer. How is it going, mate?
Yeah, it's good to be here, mate. It's been a long time coming. I've wanted to come on for a while, so yeah, it's good to finally be on the pod.
Absolutely. Well, you passed the initiations and all that sort of stuff. We definitely don't have initiations before anyone contacts. I don't know what sort of charity you'll contact, but yeah, we're happy to have you on, Harry. And you've just been chatting to in the week. Anyone on the website would have noticed Simon Cox has been chatting to us. Did a couple questions with him, didn't you? What sort of stuff were you surprised that sort of Simon Cox came out with?
Well, mainly that he wants to be manager of the club one day. I sort of knew from social media sort of that he was sort of doing his coaching badges and stuff like that. But yeah, I guess Reading is still a club firmly in his heart, which is unsurprising considering he came through the academy. So it was good to have a chat with him, and he came up with a few bombshells. His relationship with Steve Clark was a bit rocky, to say the least. But yeah, if you haven't checked it out, go and check it out on the website.
Absolutely do that. And maybe we'll just be hearing from a little bit of more Simon Cox in the next couple of weeks. We'll keep you posted on that. And speaking of keeping you posted, we may as well go and talk about Mark Bowen's first defeat for Reading on Saturday at Brentford. And let's jump into that then with the recap.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Ars!
So we didn't hit the high notes of the last few weeks of, well, Mark Bowen's only few weeks of his Reading tenure so far. And 1-0 defeat, it came, I wouldn't say as a massive surprise, Harry. It was one of those games where as a championship team, you end up, you know, you face a good team like Brentford and you hold them to the 62nd minute. It didn't really feel like, pretty much, would you say for the first half, up until the goal at least, did it really feel like Reading were the team who were going to break the deadlock, or were Brentford ultimately just kind of the better team on the day?
It was a very strange one. I think first half, neither team really created that many clear-cut chances. I think, obviously, we had the Puskas chance, which he should have buried. But we looked pretty comfortable. Everything from our goal up until the final third, I thought we looked pretty good. Just standard what Mark Bowen has brought in. Nastier, a bit more difficult to break down, a bit more direct and trying to hassle the other team. Look, Brentford are a good team. They've got good players, especially in midfield, and Benrahma on the wing. So it was always going to be a tough game. But it was one that, as it went on, you thought we might get a result here. We probably, I wouldn't say deserve, because we weren't very good, really, in all honesty, especially in the final third. But no, it was a weird game and just one of those games that just fizzled out in the end. We just couldn't get back into it after we conceded, and we hardly had a shot on goal in the second half, which was really disappointing.
Yeah, I suppose it's one of those that just kind of pass you by. In the season, a 46-game season, you're going to end up having them. And I suppose ultimately you just kind of want to, if you can have those games and come out on top in half, or, you know, nick the points away from home, then you're probably going to end up with a decent finish out of that.
Yeah, those are the games that are going to dictate where you finish in the league. Look, we've had the games against Luton, especially previously, where you're expected to win and we win and it's all good, it's comfortable. But these are the games where it can go either way, and they're the games that can really make or break a season. I don't think this result is going to really negatively affect what Bowen has done since he came in. I still think there are positives for sure. Definitely not as many as there has been in recent games, but I just hope it doesn't derail the upwards curve that Bowen has got us on recently.
Yeah, well, in terms of the two key moments of the game, then you mentioned the one earlier, the Puskas chance. He kind of got through one-on-one, try to go around the keeper, dilly-dally a little bit. The type of thing that a striker low on confidence does. And we'll go on to Puskás in a little bit, because as much as it is important, the mailbag questions really dig into it. So we'll cover Puskás in the mailbag. But for their goal, free header, far post, is this a case of poor marking, or is it actually just a good cross and you can say, you know, fair enough, we weren't going to be able to stop it?
I think the defenders are always going to look at themselves, especially when you're playing with three centre-backs, and three centre-backs that are as good in the air as Morrison, Miazga and Moore. They're going to be disappointed with that. It was a good cross into the box, but one, I feel, looking back at it, Moore should have been closer to his man. Closer to Watkins, and I think Moore knows that, considering his reaction straight after the goal. Defenders are always going to look at themselves after conceding goals. It's just a bit unfortunate and a bit poor as well, really.
Yeah, in terms of the rest of the game to talk about, there wasn't a huge amount to say. So we'll make sure we have plenty to talk about, don't worry. There's a big mailbag, so this podcast won't be ending in about 7 minutes' time. But what I will say in terms of how we interpret this defeat as across the entirety of the season, for me it kind of suggests that we're going to be steady, because our style at the moment, it kind of gives less room for the occasional worldy performances. You can say, you know, earlier in the season, the way we played Cardiff, for example, we have it in our locker. The Luton game, I suppose, was probably the closest. We'll get to that. But it's not so expressive and creative as to, you're not 100% one week and then 10% the next week. That's what I mean. It also tightens up the absolute shockers that we've had before, such as, you know, the Fulham game and stuff like that. So this game shows to me that our style does keep us more steady, we'll be more consistent, and that maybe there was a chance, you know, under a manager previously where Brentford would have got that first goal earlier or in the 62nd minute, and then we'd have gone on to concede a second and third, and it wouldn't have been just a narrow defeat, it would have been another catastrophic defeat.
Yeah, I agree. I think we have to sort of sacrifice those occasional 10 out of 10 performances for more regular 7 out of 10s. That's what's going to get you points in the Championship. Look, we played really well earlier in the season under Gomez for three games. But in the grand scheme of things, they didn't really mean anything when you're struggling at the bottom of the table. Bowen is going to bring a more consistent style of play, as you say. We might have to sacrifice a bit of flair for that. But look, this is the Championship, and sometimes you just have to be solid, direct, hassle players, you know, a bit more old-fashioned, and maybe that's what Bowen's going for, and hopefully it'll pay off.
And ultimately, we're never going to lack for flair that much, anyone who's worried about that, because we have all your Jaru in the team. So
exactly. Even in a poor game on a Saturday, he found some time and space to come up with a couple of Ovia Jaria things, really.
That's way of describing it, really, isn't it? Just Ovia Jaria things.
He's become an adjective, hasn't he? It's just a bit. Yeah. Him and Swift are always going to be our flair players. Maybe there's a bit more reliance on them now, but we'll see how they get on in the coming weeks, I guess.
Yeah, well, let's hear from Mark Bowen and what he said after the Brentford game, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about, obviously, the fact that, the cup draws permitting or pending, we've just had our last trip to Griffin Park, so we'll be talking about that in a few seconds' time.
You know, we talked about the game before the start and what we wanted, and we wanted a real, let's say, aggression in our play and a physicality and a desire. I think we got that. I think probably being slightly critical, and the lads know themselves, that maybe that little bit of quality at the right time, that little bit of guile in that final third was missing a bit today. And, you know, we've had it in the last 2 weeks, and I'm sure we'll have it again on Tuesday against Leeds. But, you know, as the game was going on, you just felt it was very evenly balanced. It was maybe who's going to have that little lack of concentration first of all, and they had it. You know, we gave it them, really, from the cross into the box for their goal. But again, you know, I think we pushed and pushed, and nothing at all wrong with our work rate and our desire. just on day, you know, this league is so evenly balanced, there's such fine margins that that little bit of quality, we had a golden opportunity in the first half with George Puskas and another bits and pieces around their box that you're thinking, well, again, you know, somebody just picks the right pass or shows that little bit of quality that we have at times on the ball, and it maybe wasn't quite there today.
Farewell Griffin Park it is then, and Harry, have you enjoyed going there? I think I'm not too wrong in saying that the Cures in 02, obviously the grandest moment of Reading yeah. history up to that point, basically, Simod Cup otherwise, was probably played out there. But ourselves, I must admit, that was kind of the season before I jumped into Reading. So in terms of our memory of going to Griffin Park, I think it's not really been that prestigious, really.
No, the Curison moment in 02, I would have been 3 years old, so it was a bit before my time of following Reading. I've only been to Griffin Park twice, and that was this season and last season. Living in the Midlands, it's been quite hard for me to get down to more games at Griffin Park. But look, it's a proper old-fashioned ground, isn't it? Terraces, you're so close to the pitch and the players. And I've loved it. Last season obviously was a bit better with the 2-2 draw, but no, it's a great little away ground, and I'm sure it'll be missed by many a Championship fan, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's an interesting one personally, because my two memories of being there, firstly I went there for I think it was under the Stam season when we got to the playoff final but lost 4-1, I seem to remember. Which, yeah, when we were just not very good, basically. The other coin of it, I actually went there as media once when Brentford played Celta Vigo when I was covering Spanish football. And it was lucky that there wasn't many people there, because if there had been any other people there in the media zone, I would have been cramped as hell. And that is what you get, I suppose, with those sort of stadiums. It is, you know, tight and congested. It is a brilliant, I suppose it's a brilliant place to be when you're winning, but it's a terrible place to be when you're losing. And it's that sort of, you know, it's much more across the spectrum that you get than, I suppose, if, you know, you're in like a Rico Arena of a Coventry and there's only 10,000 people there and you win and it's great, but, you know, you've got thousands of plastic seats around you that are unfilled. So our Reading's final record, I believe, this is my own calculation, so don't quote this as some sort of basis for an article, anyone, but I believe that our final record at Griffin Park stands at 110, drawn 14 and lost 24, and it's probably just about right for a team that, I suppose, when we have played them over the years, have been about the same level as us.
Yeah, the one win that stands out to me in recent memory was the 3-1 a few seasons ago under Clark, when Nick Blackman channeled his inner Lionel Messi like he did for those 6 months and scored two goals. But yeah, it's a record that, as you say, is probably right, and also maybe a bit disappointing looking back in hindsight, because it's a really good ground, and like you say, when you're winning, it's a great little ground with the fans so close together, so close to the pitch. I'm guessing it's probably the same for the players as well, and the fact that when you're losing, it's probably not great, because you can probably hear the fans moans and groans a bit more. But then again, on the flip side, when you're winning, you can probably hear their singing and cheering and whatever more as well. So it's a ground that I'll miss going to, even though I've only been there on the two occasions.
It'll be interesting to see how their new ground is taking shape, because it is kind of it's one of those that, because it's not massive, it doesn't look necessarily very built yet. So we're kind of waiting to see how that one turns out. But before we jump into Melbourne, just a quick digression. In terms of your other sort of favourite Championship away grounds, then what sort of ones do you pick out? Because a couple of ones that I've been to more, maybe St Andrews, Portman Road, in kind of interesting sort of stadiums in a way that they've been built at various different times over the years. But as an away fan, I've always found their experience to be kind of a little bit without character, in that sense that you get, you know, and they're not particularly brilliant view. It's not particularly good atmosphere-wise. Brentford had an okay-ish atmosphere, But what sort of ones would you say are your favourite?
If we're talking practicality wise, then probably West Brom, as it's only 15 minutes down the M5 for me. So all the other away games are pretty far away for me. But I like I love Fulham away. I think any game in London is a good away day in the grand scheme of things. Fulham, obviously, right next to the river, we tend to sell it out whenever we go. Even though we've had some pretty horrible days there in recent times, apart from obviously the 4-2 in the Premier League and that playoff semi-final. But yeah, I do like going to Fulham. West Brom, as I said, St Andrews as well is another one close to me. But yeah, there's quite a few in the Championship that I love going to. I go pretty much all around the country, but yeah, I'd probably pick Fulham as my top one. There's Charlton as well. I remember a game and Dennis Raquel's scored in the dying embers of a game to win at 4-3. And also when Danny Williams scored in the season where we just missed out on the playoffs as well. So we've had a few good days at Charlton too. But I'm quite old-fashioned in my ways, and I love a proper old-fashioned stadium. These new grounds, as you say, can sometimes be a bit more lifeless. But yeah, there's quite a few, isn't there, in the Championship, which are good days out on all accounts.
Yeah, definitely. I suppose the two I would pick out are probably Bristol City has always been a good, not too far away, always a good atmosphere. Reading, actually, generally speaking, last couple of years aside, I do well at Bristol City, and that's always been enjoyable. Cardiff as well, as my sort of uni town, has always been a nice away day, and also not too bad a city to have a nice night out in. Wigan as well has a bit of a, if you can get in there, I can't remember if they even have it now, but the bar underneath the stands and everything like that, and the sort of atmosphere around Wigan is actually, it's better than you'd expect, I suppose, is what you can say. And I suppose most people don't necessarily go to Wigan with huge expectations for those sort of things. So there it is. But yes, feel free to send in those Griffin Park memories and everything else, and your favourite away days and favourite away grounds. We'll happily bring them up on the show next week. And speaking of which, we are going to jump now into the mailbag. And you can always get in touch in that with thetilehurstend@gmail.com or on Facebook, on Twitter. And let's see what people have been sending us this week.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow The Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
So we have quite a few questions this week, Harry. Let's start with Seth then, who says that, I think, without wanting to criticise Bowen at all, the substitutions against Brentford were poor, but having thought about it after the game, I couldn't think of anything else he could have done. So my question is, what is our plan B? Will we get shut out of more games, or we will get shut out of more games, so how do we adapt to that? Just to bring you up to speed on the substitutions that Mark Bowen did bring on at Griffin Park, it was Lucas Boye, fresh back from injury, Gareth McCleary and Yaku Mate. He brought those on for the two strikers and also for Winamotta, which was the sort of last change, as a, you know, the old-fashioned just sort of go for it sort of sense. So, Harry, in terms of our plan B, we play a 3-5-2. I suppose you can make it into a 4-3-3 or a 4-4-2 if you want to late on. But otherwise, really, I think what we lack in terms of a plan B is a personnel change, because our strikers are all kind of similar. You know, you've got some strong men in there, and you've got Baldock as the sort of alternative. You haven't really got any great pace to bring off the bench. We've sold all our wingers apart from Gav McCleary, and I guess you've got Boye as well. But honestly, there's not too much you can do with that squad as a plan B.
No, I think it's been a problem that we've had for a very long time now. It was the same under Gomez as well earlier in the season. And I, when thinking about plan Bs, and I think the perfect plan B that we've had in recent years was Adam Lafondra in our most recent promotion season and in the Premier League. It's just about offering something different, isn't it? He'd just sit on the last man and chase the channels, and then he wouldn't really move from the width of the 18-yard box. And maybe that's what you need sometimes. I think Baldock coming back has offered us something a little bit different in terms of our striking options. Neither Zhao or Puskas are really players who will press or hassle and harry and get in defenders' faces. But yeah, it's a problem we've had for a long time, and it'll be something that Bowen will have to think about for sure, especially coming up to the transfer window and just trying to find maybe new positions for players as well. Can you get Boyer on the last man, because he's got a bit of pace about him? Danny Loader as well, but how long he'll stick around, we don't know. But yeah, it's a difficult one, and one that Bowen will have to sort out pretty sharpish, judging on Saturday's game.
And the thing is, for me as well, with Boyer, is that he's been a winger most of his sort of career. So to sort of rely on him as a Lafondre type, he might have all the characteristics, but will he have the mental sort of, you know, the sharpness and the extra, you know, split second thinking that you need? It's very difficult, and it is one for the transfer window, I think. And it relates to Cuzzy's question, the next question as well. He says, given the Gomez era is over and Bowen is in full force with his first loss, new signings have had time to gel now, what would be a successful season for Reading? What are we realistically looking to achieve here? Top six, playing meaningful games in February or March, avoiding relegation or cup run? And I think a successful season, if we go into the January market and we don't sign anyone, I think it still is very much in that realm of let's get to mid-table. As Cuz says, meaningful games in February and March would be really nice. And if we get to, you know, three games away and we're 7 points off the playoffs, I think we'd bite your hand off for that. It's that simple. If, however, we do go in and we make the signings that provide the plan B, someone with a bit more pace, etc., etc., then I suppose you kind of up it a little bit. But, I mean, I'm not paying too much attention for that now, Harry, because I don't actually think we are going to really go and sign anyone in January.
No. We spent quite a bit, didn't we, in summer. I think Bowen said in recent interviews that he's happy with his squad and that he doesn't feel that he needs to go into the transfer market as much. Whether he's just saying that to cover up the fact that we can't is another question. But
in terms of a successful season, then where do you think, if we're playing, you know, the last five games of the season effectively dead rubbers, would you still be okay with that, or is that perhaps a little bit off?
I think no one wants to be playing for nothing come the end of the season. I mean, I'd rather obviously play for nothing than be trying to avoid relegation. But Bones also talked about trying to get within touching distance of that top six in time for January, February. I think I saw him say that recently. So maybe that, but it's hard to, when a team's as inconsistent as Reading and has the potential that we do, it's quite difficult to put your finger on an exact what is a successful season. I think if you're looking on terms of quality on paper, we've got more than enough to be challenging the top 10, top six. But we've been saying that for how many years? So I personally am the same as you in the fact that mid-table would do me this season. I think that would be successful and obviously progress on the last few seasons, barring Yapstown's playoff final season, of course, where we've been in and around the bottom three. So, yeah, I'm in the same boat as you, thinking mid-table, maybe upper mid-table if possible.
And I would add credit to Reading fans, I mean, not just for agreeing with me, but for having that sort of sense of realism at the moment that a mid-table finish would be enough, because it'd be very easy, and some fans I think did slip into it when we signed Puskas and we won a couple of games, to think there we go, playoffs, that's the sort of level, it's that easy. But it isn't that easy, and what we're going to talk about now is exactly why it's not that easy. And this is this sort of gaggle of questions we've got on Mr. Puskas himself, with Matthew Hutchinson asking, do you think we wasted money on Puskas? Zhao has better stats and he costs less. Also, he's played less games, but Baldock is better than them both. So I am asking, do we think he was a necessary signing? David Newell says, do you realistically think that Puskás can make it in the Championship? And Ollie Huxford asking, do you think Puskás will be off in January and will bring in someone else? Would like Loader to be given a chance, but his head has been turned by other clubs. Now let's kind of unpack that into a few different sort of topics of conversation with Puskás. Firstly, in a sort of quickfire way, do you think that Puskás will still be in the at the club at the end of the transfer window?
Yes, in one word, I do. Obviously, there's been rumours about, is it Fenerbahce or Galatasaray, one of them?
Coming
in for him. But I would be very, very surprised if he's not still at the club come the end of January. I think he'll still be here.
I think if he was going to go at the end of January, during January, that would be a sign that... I mean, we get the noises from the other players. Like, I remember Jordan Avita telling us the other week that you can see in training at least why was at Inter Milan. And if that is the case and there is something to work with there, then I can't see him leaving unless he really, really wants to, which I'd be surprised to if that is the case, to be honest. But if he really is that level of potential, then Reading won't let him go. And they'll trust in him. However, do we as fans at this moment realistically think that he's going to make it in the Championship?
Again, yes, I do. I'm a big admirer of Puskás. I know he's missed chance after chance, but that happens to any striker, particularly young strikers who are trying to make it in a country that they've never played in before. There's a reason we spent a reported £8 million on him, and there's a reason why he's his country's number nine at the age of 23. He's obviously a fantastic talent, and I think he will make it in the Championship. He'll score goals. He's shown us glimpses of what he can do. Obviously that game against Cardiff where he ran them ragged, and the goal against QPR, which was a brilliant finish, and was a bit undermined by Ajari's assist, which is pretty understandable, but the run and the finish was just as good from Puskás. And I think he will make it in the Championship. I think he's got a lot of talent and he's offering a lot to the team other than goals, but I think he'll, at the end of the day, he gets judged by that price tag, doesn't he? Which is unfair in a way, because it's not up to him how much he gets signed for. He's going to get judged by that. And when he misses chances, it will be seen a lot clearer because of that price tag. But I'm still confident in him, and I still think he'll be able to fire us at the table, hopefully.
Well, hopefully. And that's the thing. I take your point on that he is missing chances. And it just makes me think that the fact that he is missing chances means he is getting into the right position at the end of the day, and that there is that massive danger. I'm not saying that I particularly fear this, but if you do move him on to, and it is another Championship club that takes a punt on him, he could get those chances. And there is that feeling with Puskás, he's one of those strikers that if he scores one, then two, then three, then hopefully whatever sort of funk he's in at the moment, he will break out of, and then it could be 15 in as many games or something silly like that. It really does feel like when he gets into positions that often, there is something to work with at the very least. But I will say, with Matthew Hutchinson's question, I do 100% understand where it's coming from, because I've said this many times on the podcast that Lucas Joao was signed for £5 million. We said all summer that we had no money, and then I said, fine, if you're going to spend money and that's going to be your man, there it is. We want this guy. He's the most important player. We've signed him, even though we've got no money, just to make sure we're going to be safe, etc. That's fine. That's a plan. That isn't a plan anymore if you then go and sign someone else for £8 million 2 days later. And it just feels to me, obviously, Joao has been injured, so it's hard to... I think it's hard for the... I can't say at the moment who is the better striker, because obviously they're not really... You know, neither has really has shown themselves to be better than the other one. But in terms of the necessary signing, do you think why do you think we signed him? Do you think we signed him for goals now? Do you think we signed him as a potential? Was it a case that we got offered him? You know, agents got involved that we know, and it felt like a too good a deal to turn down. Why do you think that we signed him?
Well, I think It's a bit of a mix, really. He was signed at a time, remember, when Baldock wasn't in the picture at all, really. And the only first team strikers we had was Mate, and Loader, and Barrow was still at the club, I believe, at that point. So he was signed at a time when I think we needed a striker, another striker. So in that case, I do think he was necessary, and I still do think he was necessary, because he's obviously a quality player. Obviously, with a club like Inter Milan and George Puskas, who wasn't an unknown player, people knew about him from his time at Inter Milan and playing for Romania. There was more than likely some kind of agent involvement. I would be surprised if there wasn't. There tends to be more than there isn't these days. But yeah, it was a big statement of intent from the owners to pay that much money for him. So I still think he was necessary. At the time he was signed, even more so because Baldock wasn't in the picture, as I just said. So yeah, it's just one of those signings that has had a bit of a mix of everything, really.
Yeah, well, Tom Harris-Smith asks, does that game against Brentford simply show how far our squad is behind the top teams in the division? It didn't seem like we had an answer against what was an undeniably a very good team, and didn't seem to have good enough options on the bench. I think, as we discussed with our sort of plan B, do we have a top squad in the division? No. Do we have a top first 11 in the division? I think we probably do have one of the top 8 or 10 first 11s in the division, but it is that squad that, for me, and obviously, you know, the fact we are under a new manager, etc., etc., does hold us back a little bit. And, I mean, how far, saying that Brentford are one of the top teams in the division, they've not really been in the playoff picture for a couple of years, even though they are, you know, they're 8th at the moment, 2 points behind them, behind the playoffs. How far away do you think we are then from the top teams? Is it a case of a transfer window? Is it the case of just general time under Bowen? Or
In the Championship, you're never far behind any team. As everyone knows, it takes one or two or three good results and you're in the mix and you've got momentum. I wouldn't say we're too far behind Brentford at all, really. I don't think they caused us any more problems than we caused them at any one point, obviously apart from the goal. And there was a spell in the first half when they were on top. But yeah, as you said, we've got a really good starting 11. It's just that squad. I'm sure we've got players to come back, obviously, in Zhao and Boye is still returning, trying to get back up to full fitness. And obviously Tom McIntyre as centre-back as well. So I don't think we're too far away in terms of quality, and especially comparing ourselves to Brentford. But yeah, it's a difficult one, isn't it, really? The options off the bench weren't too great, as we've already discussed. They didn't really come up with the goods. But I don't think we're far away. It just takes time and maybe a transfer window. But as we've already said, whether or not we'll actually have much activity in that transfer window remains to be seen. But not too far away at all, I believe.
Well, speaking of the substitutes then, Marlin has tweeted us saying, does everyone agree that the exact minute Mate came on against Brentford, we were utter garbage, and that's probably, brackets, I hope, the last time he will feature under Bowen in any meaningful way apart from the cup. Nice guy, but clearly not up to it. Quite strong for Marlin, that. And the Akimata, I mean, what did you make of his appearance off the bench? Did he really have any kind of impact?
No, he didn't, unfortunately. I've never personally been convinced by Mate. I think he's obviously a big threat in the air and came up with some huge goals for us last season. That can't be denied. Without his goals, we'd probably be in League One right now. So to say that he offers absolutely nothing may be a bit harsh. But yeah, he just didn't really offer anything. He was he wasn't winning anything in the air, which is usually what makes his performances a bit better. Technically, he's never been a great footballer. But yeah, strong words by Marlon there. But I'm sure he's probably not the only fan who will be feeling it after Saturday.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? It's with Mate, it depends where he fits into the squad. That he's obviously an asset in terms of his goal scoring ability and his transfer market value. He's obviously up against some strikers that Reading have spent a lot of money on now, and you know, he's a bit of a streaky player. He's had his season, you could say, but really you could break down that season into two or three really good goal scoring spells, and then, you know, in amongst that some quite long dry spells. So hopefully Mark Bowen has a plan for him, but at the moment that does seem to be sort of a squad player off the bench option, and in that he's not impressed too much. But it will be one of them. Matt King has sent in on the topic of strikers. As this, I suppose after a 1-0 defeat, we probably shouldn't be too surprised everyone wants to talk about our strikers and lack of goals. But he says, do we need to add another striker to our squad over January? If so, what should we be looking for? I would just say quite quickly that it's a pacey striker that we need. We need someone who can stretch the defence, get in behind, whether that's working with Baldock or instead of him. Just someone who has that extra sort of X factor that we don't have at the moment.
Definitely. As you said, we've got a few options up front, but they're all very, very similar, really. Boye, Puskas, Baldock, they're all quite similar players. And then Zhao is more of on the face of it, he's more of a target man, big striker, but he's also quite a tricky player as well. He likes to drop deep. So yeah, someone pacey, can get in behind. They're hard to come by these days for a reasonable price. And I'm going to guess that we don't really have much funding at the minute, considering our summer spending. Maybe trying to dip into the loan market like we did so effectively last year. But yeah, someone who can just sit on the left shoulder of the back four and run those channels and try and get in behind players, because in the Championship that's a very dangerous weapon.
Absolutely. And the final question, I mean, we call it a question, Fenders has asked, should we bring back Hal Robson-Kanu? Which is one I'm just going to let hang in the air and say that, in fact, the Hal Robson-Kanu award will be being given out in just under a month's time, and it is actually time of year to think about the Tireless End Christmas podcast special, which we always invite as many people who want to come down. It's usually not too many, obviously, because otherwise we'd have to like hire out the Hexagon or something stupid. But is anyone who wants to come down, I'll hopefully have the details for that exactly, you know, not too far away. I think it's most likely to be on Monday the 23rd of December, lunchtime in Reading, is when the Christmas podcast is most likely to be going on. We'll obviously invite anyone who wants to come down. We'll be very happy to have some people come down, and you obviously get the chance to vote on the awards, on the Hal Robson-Kanu Underachiever Award and the Player of the Year and the Breakout of the Year. So that all to look forward to in the next few weeks. And before, obviously, we have to get onto any of that, we've got Leeds coming up on Tuesday. But next, we're going to have a quick look across the news bites across the club, and then we'll jump into Big Game Preview after that.
You're listening to the Tilehurst End Podcast, by Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Right then, let's rattle off what's been going on across the club this week. And the women's team have been going in plenty of action. Now they're back from their international break. An excellent comeback from two goals and a player down at West Ham on Saturday for the women. Jade Moore with the winner in a 3-2 victory. Crystal Palace were beaten 6-0 in the Conti Cup a few days before that. And that was really a bounce back from a pretty disappointing 3-3 draw at home with Bristol City in the Women's Super League just before that. So sixth at the moment in the WSL. Game in hand, next up, Brighton away on a Friday. And the under-23s, they're just about finishing off now against Norwich City under 23 at Adams Park. 0-0 it's currently at, so I'm reasonably sure it's going to finish that. In terms of first team players who are playing tonight, Charlie Adam was in the team, as was Josh Barrett. So not too many, no, not too To see Charlie Adam there.
We've just seen that Norwich have scored in the last minute in that one.
it's just as well that I did them after the Reading women part of the roundup, because otherwise we wouldn't have known that was going
to
happen.
No, there you go, 1-0 in the 91st minute to Norwich.
Oh well, yeah, I suppose that's just as well that we've waited to bring that up and had that brilliantly positive bit of information come through. No, thank you for checking that. And they're next up. If you want to go and watch the team that have just lost to Norwich, pending any last minute equaliser, they're at home to Charlton on Thursday at 3 p.m. at the Mad Stad. And the under-18s, they beat Middlesbrough 4-3 in the Premier League Cup on Saturday. And speaking of academy players, the only other real bit of news out of the club this week is that Jokul Andreason, the Icelandic goalkeeper, brother of Axel Andreason, who was at the club last few years and is now in Norway, for those with a good memory, he's signed a new contract to 2022. So, Harry, it's good to see that we've got, you know, we had a long line of goalkeepers sort of coming through. We all thought maybe one would be given a chance. Turned out none of them were given a chance. Pretty much all of them have been moved on now. I'm talking about Lewis Ward and Luke Southwood. And now we've got Jokul Andreason. He went away with the team on pre-season. And, you know, new deal, good sign.
Yeah, it's always good seeing academy players progress through the ranks, and hopefully Jokul is the next one. There's Kanai Boyce Clark as well, who's a highly rated keeper in our academy too. He was playing for the under-23s tonight, I believe, actually. So yeah, it's looking good in that department. But it's always good news to see an academy player impressing and signing a new deal.
Yeah, the only depressing thing, I suppose, out of that is that I looked at that and thought, oh, 2022, that's a big long deal. Then I realised, oh, no, it's 2.5 years. So that's just how that's going to be. But yeah, we'll jump on now over to Big Game Preview, and then we'll finish off the show.
There's another huge game ahead for the Royals. So be loud and be proud for the Big Match Preview.
So Leeds is on a Tuesday night, and this is it's just one of those games that you really, it's an interesting, fun, brilliant chance to beat a team that you also know if you lose to, it's just going to be one of those awful, depressing nights at the Mad Stad you want to forget as quick as possible. The range of emotion is quite strong when you play a team like Leeds at home. And Harry, we come up against them after they've just snatched the last minute win at Luton, the classic sort of smash and grab, I suppose, for a team away from home against a team, you know, bottom versus top and all that sort of stuff. How do you see Leeds playing out?
As you say, it's a pretty daunting prospect. It's one of those games that will probably go one of two ways. We'll probably either snatch a scrappy win, or we might be on the bad end of a pretty nasty result. I've got the same feeling going into this one as I did earlier in the season against Fulham, in that I was confident in a way, but also knew that it could go pretty bad considering the quality of the opposition. And we all know how that one turned out. So hopefully it's not a repeat, but no, there'll be a lot of nervous excitement, I'm sure, around the fan base, and it'll be a good chance to see exactly where we're at coming up against a team of Leeds' quality and stature.
I must admit, this feels a lot more daunting after the Saturday defeat. If we'd have beaten Brentford, I'd be very up for this game. But after the 1-0 defeat, just think, hang on a second, if we can have a few more days, a few more games to be ready for this, then that'd be brilliant. And I suppose that in terms of the team, it's pretty straightforward for a lot of it. Andy Yeardom is banned, I believe, so Chris Gunter or Teddy Howe, which ones do you reckon is going to come in?
They would be the most obvious ones. There's also the potential of putting Rinomota into right wing back and then bringing Pelé into midfield, which we've seen Rinomota play that position a couple of times in recent times. But I would be very surprised if we didn't see Gunter make a return back to the starting 11, which I'm sure will please some fans and not please some fans as well. But look, Yardum's banned, so someone's got to come in, and I'm pretty sure it'll be Gunter. But other than that, I can't really see any other changes being made. Maybe Puskas, but I guess that's a decision that Bowen has to make, isn't it?
Yeah, the thing is with Puskás is Yaku Meite is that very unlikely, I think, to start in front of him because he's not really done anything to impress. The one who might is Lucas Boye. Do you think that there is any real chance that he'll come in? Or
That was the one I was thinking of, maybe Boye coming in to start. But yeah, I still think Puskás might be given another chance to break his goal scoring drought and start firing them in. But I would not be surprised in the slightest to see Boye come in and start alongside Baldock, who I hope isn't injured. I didn't think I'd ever say that again. but yeah, I hope Baldock isn't too badly injured. I think Bowen said that he got taken off just before he felt it. So before he felt it go. So hopefully he's okay and can start. So the question is who partners in, Boye or Puskás? And I wouldn't be surprised to see either of them, really. It's just up to Bowen, I guess.
Well, it's on Sky Sports, which I mean, Puskás is probably the one you want to start.
That's very all true.
I'm pretty sure all his goals now have come against the in front of the cameras being live. So yeah, we'll obviously on Tyler's then. Please keep an eye out for all the report and ratings and everything we'll have up on the website. And then this podcast will be back after the Wigan game to talk about things. In terms of the predictions, filling you were all in on the prediction league is the fact that I was the only one who got 1-0 for Brentford. So I've now continued. I said to Johnny, this must be what Steve Coppell feels like when everything you touch basically keeps up a pretty standard lead. So I'm up to 18 points at the moment. With that, Johnny also got a defeat, so he's on 11. And then Wim Westy on 9 and Ollie Sim on 7 and Handbags on 5. So, Harry, would you like to make a prediction then for the Leeds game? And there's probably one of the worst games to make a prediction for is the one that we invite you on to discuss, I suppose.
Yeah. I never, ever, ever like prediction results against Reading, so I'm not going to do that. But I'm going to go for 2-2.
2-2. Well, that's I think most Reading fans will absolutely snap your hand off for that. And I'm gonna have to be tactical on the old prediction league and say that I think a 3-1 defeat will befall Reading. A 3-1 or maybe 2-1, because Leeds don't score a huge amount of goals, but they are good away from home. That is really their. I mean, they're not bad at home, obviously, but this really is where they sort of seem to pull out their most progressive football. So. So a home defeat might well be on the cards on Tuesday night. And then we go to Wigan, which Saturday is hopefully going to be a bit of a calmer experience than something we face on Tuesday. So that draws to close the 210th episode of the Tyler's Den. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening. Thank you very much, Harry, for popping by on your debut.
No worries. It was great to be on here. I'm looking forward to coming on again maybe in the future.
Absolutely, we'll definitely have you on again. And Reading fans, we go into what is, maybe it's just me, maybe I'm the only one who feels a bit pessimistic going into Leeds and foreseeing the avalanche of goals that we're potentially conceding. I just hope that a defeat, hopefully like this defeat, won't be a season, you know, killer, won't be the sort of thing that drains momentum away from us. And that even there is that glimmer of hope that a point or a win on Tuesday night is the sort of thing that can catapult us back into the good times after the mere blip that was Griffin Park. We bid farewell to Griffin Park now, and we bid farewell to you listeners. Thank you very much for joining us, and come on your ass. Yeah.
smile. Funny how the crowd.